This is episode 7 of the Sales Change Podcast, and this is the one with Mark Hunter. So Mark Hunter's moniker is the Sales Hunter, and he was built for sales. His book, High Profit Prospecting, has got me more sales than you could possibly imagine. In this episode, we talk about closing deals, we talk about the problem with salespeople right now, how Mark fell into sales, and everything in between. If you like the podcast, then go to your favorite podcast platform, rate us 5 stars, leave me a review. That would be nice. In fact, if you want more information, visit www.saleschange.co.uk/podcast, sign up for the newsletter, and you enjoy this episode. Welcome, Mark, to the Sales Change Podcast. I hope you're well. How are you, my friend?
I am doing terrific.
How's the weather out in Seattle?
Weather is drizzly, rainy, just like it is for you in London, right?
It's beautiful. We try and spread this weather across the globe. I'm sure in the future, everybody's going to have London weather and you'll learn to live with it.
Oh, thank you so much. I so appreciate you just giving and caring and sharing so much.
That's what the United Kingdom's all about.
There are some things you can keep, okay?
Go on, name them. Name them. Now you've said it.
Oh, no, now, wow. Okay, some of your politics, no, we won't.
No,
we won't,
no, no.
We better not talk politics, okay?
No, because I could have a Trump card for that one.
Ooh. I will up your Boris one more. How's that sound?
So, tell me a bit about you, Mark. Tell the listeners who you are, what you've done, how you've got into sales, all that type of stuff. So, give us your background story.
Yeah. Well, I got into sales purely by accident. I'll get into that in just a second, but I'm known as the Sales Hunter. And yeah, that's my real last name. People always say, what was your name before you changed? No, that was my real last name. Now, having the name Hunter, you'd kind of think I was in sales all along. No, I got into sales purely by accident. Well, not quite by an accident. I got in because of speeding tickets. I got too many speeding tickets and nobody was hurt. There were no accidents. But I literally got to the point that I could not afford car insurance. And I had to go find a job that supplied me with a car. That's how I wound up in sales.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's a real scientific approach, isn't it? I mean, just, you know.
Do you know how I ended up in sales? And it's a very similar story.
How's that?
I had a few too many driving convictions on my license. And I was working as a laborer. I was just doing, like, I served in the British Army for 8 years, left the army, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and sort of stumbled into landscape gardening and was doing electrician work. And then this was because I had far too many driving convictions. And then one of my family members said, why don't you come and work for us? You've got the gift of the gab. You could talk to anybody. And I was that type of person. I was the type of person that could hold a conversation, light up a room, be able to bring people and have that sort of magnetic influence. So when she said, come and work for us, I sort of jumped in with both feet. And yeah, I haven't looked back. That was nearly 20 years ago now.
Well, you know what? I mean, see, this is a classic case. Very few people start out in life, oh, I want to be in sales. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a professional basketball player, be a police officer, something of that nature. It was not to be a salesperson. And so, yeah, the journey we all take to get into sales is unique, but I think that's what makes the sales profession special.
It is. It is. And what did you start off selling?
I was selling sides of beef. Now, how's that? Sides of beef. And you know what? I was so good at that job, I got fired from that job. How's that? Yeah, I mean, I had no clue what I was doing. But remember, I got into sales because of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think to a certain degree, over the years, that really forced me to, you know, really understand what sales is all about. And it wasn't until I was on about my third job that my boss pulled me aside and really asked me the questions as to why I was in sales. Well, I didn't have the heart to tell him it was because of the car. but, it, you know, he began to shape my opinion and my view that sales is about your ability to help people, your ability to help people see and achieve what they didn't think was possible. That's my definition of sales. So really, if you think about what we do in terms of sales training, what we do, it's how do we take the typical salesperson, which is kind of a rain barrel. You know, they just take the business that just drops into their lap. I call that customer service, and turn them into rainmakers. And rainmakers have to go out. And of course, hey, because we're talking about the weather here, so we can talk about that. Rainmakers, we have to go out and create incremental opportunities. That's what sales is all about, incremental opportunities.
How did you stumble across that epiphany of actually this is about helping people rather than selling sides of beef?
Yeah, well, what happened was, like I said, I was on my third sales job. And my boss was really pulling me aside. He says, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And he challenged me. He said, are you making a difference in people? Are you making a difference in people? And do you really understand what their needs are? And he was challenging me on this whole order-taking mentality. Because again, this is what too many salespeople do. All they do is take orders.
That's the rain barrel mentality. Yeah. Just sit there hoping that marketing works, hope that the inbound works.
Oh, yeah. It's insane. And so that's what began to put the light bulb, you know, this very dim bulb in my brain and began to get it brighter and brighter. Because we have to see sales. And see, here's the key thing we have to keep in mind about sales. If I have the ability to help you, if I had the ability to help you, Matt,
yep.
It's my obligation to reach out to you. It's my obligation.
And that's what
prospecting is.
So I've worked with sales teams before, and I've worked with people that were in my sales teams, and they didn't want to quote the client because they didn't think that the client could afford it. They didn't want to quote the client because they didn't want to give them a price which they have to pay for. I mean, this was for a particular person. I'm not going to name and shame him, but he was struggling with the concept that actually, in order to succeed in sales, your job is to identify the opportunity, identify the issue or the pain problem, and then solve it. That's what you have to do.
Yeah. The example I like to use is if you saw a fire, if you saw a house on fire, and you did not know the people there, you did not know the people who live there, would you say, oh, I don't know those people, so let me see if I can connect with them on Facebook or Instagram, or let me see if I can't network. No, you would immediately run to that house and see if you can't help. You would immediately. Yeah. You see, this is what sales and prospecting is all about. If you have the ability to help somebody, it is your obligation. And if you don't help them, you're doing them a disservice. Now, if they reject what you have to offer, if they totally reject what you have to offer,
if they don't want their house,
right, then that's their own problem. Okay, yeah. then you know,
can't help everybody.
They got something else going on.
Yeah, do you think that's the difference between high ticket closers, like people that are hugely successful in sales, and the ones that aren't successful? Because there's a lot of people that aren't successful because otherwise they wouldn't be.
Yes,
we wouldn't be around. The sales coaches of this world wouldn't be there to help and hold the salespeople's hands.
That is a huge. Without doubt, salespeople, one of the big challenges salespeople have to realize is the most difficult sale they make is to themselves. It's to themselves, because if they fail to believe in how they can help somebody, then there's no way the customer will ever believe them. If they themselves can't understand how what they have to offer can help somebody, how can they ever convince somebody else? They can't. The most difficult customer is yourself.
And you've got to believe in the product that you're selling. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, when I say believe in the product, it's believe in the outcome. Believe in the outcome. Because remember, nobody buys anything. What they want is they want an outcome. They want a solution.
Yeah, nobody buys the hammer because they want a hammer. They're buying it to put the nail in the wall. That's the outcome.
Without a doubt. And that's what you got to keep your focus on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, how did you come about starting writing books, Mark? Because you can see behind me, I've got high profit prospecting behind me. And what you can't see, I've had Anthony Anarino on the show. I've had Mike Weinberg, and all of their books are in the bookcase behind me. However, the difference between their books and your book, and let me just grab it and show you. The difference between their book and your book is that your book has tabs, because this book has helped me no end in picking up the telephone, identifying the people that I need to speak to, and just working through that process. So this is a huge, if anybody in the audience is listening and they're struggling with the method behind prospecting, then honestly, your book helped me no end.
Hey, that is a huge thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I like that. And that's really the reason I wrote that book. And you know, you've read that book because you see that there are templates in there for emails and phone calls and really step-by-step guidelines, so to speak. In fact, it's interesting. After I wrote High Profit Prospecting, huge success. But that's the reason I wrote my third book, A Mind for Sales, because a lot of people are saying, okay, you've shown me how to do it, but I'm still struggling. Yeah. And I go, well, that's because you don't have a mind for sales. And that's why I wrote the current book, because it's about getting your head screwed on straight, like what we've been talking about.
So what's the fundamentals, Mark? What's the fundamentals in having a mind for sales?
The fundamentals begin on really three levels. One, being focused as to the outcome you can achieve. Okay. Two, being focused on who you're going to be reaching out to. In other words, knowing who your audience is. And three, being disciplined to execute. Those are, without a doubt, those are the three. If I had to boil it all down, those would be the three most fundamental things you have to have. And the first one and the last one are totally dependent upon your brain, your head, your mental thinking.
Yeah.
Because if you don't believe you can make an outcome, if you don't believe you can make a difference, there's no way you'll be disciplined in following through.
I think a lot of people struggle as well. I could probably add a fourth to that. A lot of people, where you're saying the discipline, the process behind it, and I suppose that's what High Profit Prospecting outlines, is the process in actually recording where you're successful, where you fail, what you like, your success rate needs to, you need to be able to reflect and say, actually, I was successful because of point A, B, and C. I'm going to replicate that and do that over and over again. And it's exactly the same as, let's say, Cristiano Ronaldo practicing free kicks or Tom Brady throwing a Hail Mary. They practice that throw and they practice that kick over and over again until they've got that technique exactly perfectly right.
And it's amazing. You used football in both examples, and they just have completely... No, it's okay.
Which football are you on about? Because
Well, I'm in the U.S., so naturally we play football where you know...
Yeah, we play soccer.
Yeah, I know.
But it's true, though.
We won't get into that argument, okay?
No, I had that argument with Mike, actually, on the podcast. I'm a football fan, so I'm a Dolphins fan, so... You couldn't really call it football at the moment with the streak they're on, but yeah, I'm a football fan rather than a soccer fan. So you'll win me over every time.
Okay, good.
Do you think, given the COVID situation and the coronavirus, and given your book, A Mind for Sales, do you think salespeople need to get into a different mindset given the current situation?
Well, yes, without a doubt. There's a couple things that have to change because of COVID. And people ask me, did you write the book A Mind for Sales purely for COVID? No, I wrote it a year ago. It just happened to come out, you know, in April of this year as COVID was really starting to hit strong here in the United States. The whole challenge about sales is we have to understand and be willing to demonstrate more empathy than ever. We have to be more authentic than ever. We have to be more transparent than ever. And we have to demonstrate integrity. Because there's so much struggle, so much pain, so much skepticism, so much
fear,
personal and emotional issues that are occurring.
There's a lot of fear around.
A lot of fear. And the number one decision people are making right now is no decision, because they don't know what's coming next because of COVID, because of everything else going on. That really ups the ante in terms of what we have to be doing in sales.
And how can salespeople do that, Mark? How can they? Is it just leading through empathy and delivering through empathy? So listening constantly to what the clients are telling you and then offering to help?
What it comes down to is really being able to create a level of trust and confidence with the other party. Because if I can't create trust and confidence with the other party, there's no way they're going to listen to me. I mean, look at what happens in politics. Let's use politics and I'm not going to pick political sides. We can talk UK politics, we can talk US politics. But isn't it amazing how it's the candidate that you trust the most or you have the most confidence? That's the message you believe. So we have to, in sales, be able to create trust and confidence. And we do that through listening, but we do that through being empathetic, by being authentic, by being transparent, by creating a level of integrity.
See, there is a, I can't remember who wrote it, but the trust equation where you've got reliability, consistency, and intimacy all above self-interest. And I think salespeople need to move away from having that element of self-interest. So they need to focus less on their commission checks. They need to focus less on their revenue numbers. And I mean, that's hugely important to a business. Cash flow is massively important. But in order to capture more sales, we need to be reliable. We need to show up when we're going to say we're going to show up. We need to be consistent. We need to deliver consistent value, but we also need to have that level of intimacy. So we need to know our customers' pain points. And I'm not talking about the issues that we solve or the outcome that we're trying to achieve. I'm talking about intimate personal relationships. So we know exactly how they're feeling, how many staff have they got to let go, how many have they had to furlough. All of these types of issues that surround coronavirus and the COVID outbreak, salespeople need to learn this from their clients.
They have to learn this. And what this does is when you create this level of trust, when you create this level of confidence, you're able to go what I call three levels deep. You have to go three levels deep with any conversation because the initial conversation is purely superficial. The second level begins to get to it, but it's that third level down. And that customer is not going to share that with you unless they have a level of trust and confidence with you. But that third level down is really where you have to get to. And when you get to that point, now I can begin to really create a customer. Because you were talking about something very interesting, cash flow, customers. Here's a chicken and egg question. Which came first, cash flow or the customer? Well, guess what? If I don't have a customer, I don't have cash flow.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It's a great way to look at it. I mean, I don't know if you felt the same, but literally 10 minutes before this podcast recording, I went to take a toilet break and I was flicking through my phone and I've got four LinkedIn invitation requests from people that saying, hey, you're in the same industry as me, or we have common interests and do you fancy connecting or extending your network? I guarantee, and I've had it within the last week, I've received four messages from the same guy. We're not connected in any way. We have no industry affiliation, but he's trying to have that outreach in order to grow the network. Now, I don't know if this is being done by automation or whether it's being done because we're so desperate for sales, but it just stinks of desperation. And there's that element of self-interest, which really just erodes that trust. Are you finding the same?
I am finding the same thing. And this is why sales has such a bad impression. This is why people don't like it. I mean, I get those same messages and it's stupid. Or maybe I do connect with somebody and then 2 seconds later, they're trying to pitch me on something. Yeah. Hold it. You haven't earned the right. You see, here's my whole objective. With each connection I make, with each relationship I have, with each conversation, I want to earn the right, the privilege, honor, and respect to be able to have another conversation. And that person burns that bridge when they send you that type of a LinkedIn message.
So my day job, I sell thermoplastic valves, and there's a couple on the shelves behind me, but you can't really see them in the picture. But I sell valves. But I've had, over the last 6 weeks, I've had connection requests from people who do factory flooring, open bay doors. I've had four or five from telecoms companies saying, have we thought about going to a VoIP messaging system? And guys, honestly, if you want to sell, pick up the phone, call me. Unfortunately, the four people that have offered me a VoIP telephone system, we upgraded, 6 months ago to a new VoIP telephone system. So I'm not going to suddenly go, oh yeah, we want a new one. So they're trying to sell without the need. If they identify the need first, and it's like running into a house and saying it's on fire, to go back to that analogy, but it's not actually on fire.
Right.
You've already caught the fire again, and you're starting to spray water.
Well, this is one of the big challenges that I find. A lot of people are so bad in sales, but what I'll always say is even a blind squirrel will find an occasional acorn.
Yeah.
And they feel if they just throw out enough messages, somebody is going to take on. You know, as a kid, I used to go fishing. And I remember one time I went fishing. We didn't have bait. But for some reason, I thought I could throw my hook in the water and a fish would just, that's the same thing that a lot of salespeople are doing right now. It doesn't work.
What do you think about the numbers game, Mark? Because when I first started in sales, I started with the I started door-to-door selling, and I was selling gas and electricity contracts to people. So I was just, it was a numbers game. And what we'd do is we'd have a clipboard, and we'd highlight four or five addresses in one color, then four or five addresses in another. So every single house that we went to thought they'd had, oh, we've been highlighted, because I'm pointing to the highlighted line. Oh, we must be in for a special deal. All of these psychological tactics. But all I had was a list of 200 houses, which I had to knock on and sell them gas and electricity contracts. What do you think about the numbers game? Because it infuriates me. I think that's where the fear of cold calling has come from. Because cold calling to me is not cold calling. It's, you've identified the need, and it's exactly what you say in your book. And I suppose it goes down to the three fundamentals that you've got in your mind for sales. You know who you're going to talk to, you know what you're trying to achieve, and you know, I can't remember the third one, you have to remind me.
The third one, in terms of the discipline.
Oh, that's it.
Of following through.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So sorry, yeah. I'll let you answer the question. How do you feel about the numbers game?
Yeah, I can't stand the numbers game. Now, there are some numbers that we have to benchmark, but there's two reasons I don't like the numbers game. There's a lot of things that are easy to measure. And just because it's easy to measure doesn't mean it should be measured. This is where a lot of salespeople go awry. I know a lot of salespeople who will measure well, I got 10 more LinkedIn connections today or 6 more. Who cares? You can't take connections to the bank. Now, here's the whole thing. It's not so much a numbers game as it's a quality game. My whole view is this. And I talk about it in my book, High Profit Prospecting. I talk about it in my new book, A Mind for Sales. I would much rather have 10 prospects that I know really well and I can spend more time with and have 300 in their sample. Well, if I just get 100 more prospects, what happens is they can't manage what they have. Don't start what you can't finish. My objective is to have fewer prospects that I can spend more time with. I'm going to make more money that way.
Oh, for sure. And that's what fundamentally changed when you said you had an epiphany when your boss said to you, you need to solve these people's problems. You need to deliver an outcome. My epiphany was I was knocking all these doors and I wasn't solving anything. I was just repeating the script, which had been drummed into me. I remember flying up to Edinburgh in Scotland to go and have a day's retreat in how to sell, which wasn't. It was that, so that we could learn this script verbatim. And they even had this mock-up door in the classroom, so you had to knock the door, say the exact same words over and over again. That's not selling. That's just being a monkey, and that is literally the numbers game. You're sending 100 people out onto the street with 100 doors they've got to knock. You are going to, it's the fish in a barrel again. You are going to catch one or two. And when you pay these people commission only, you're going to get paid off those deals no matter how many hours the people put in. So that's where I think the poor reputation of sales has come from. And when I joined a company previously and said, right, we need to do some outreach. We need to start bringing in some new business. Immediately, salespeople get the defensive and they say, that's not what I've signed up for. I've signed up for account management. I've got a client. I've got this. I've got that. Why can't we just upsell? That's not how you grow a company.
No, that's customer service. Yes. That's customer service.
Yeah.
And if you, and I'm all about trying to maximize current business, and I'm all about referrals and repeat and upselling and so forth, but I can't rely on that. You have to be constantly going out there and working to get new customers in, because otherwise what happens is you become beholden to one or two customers. In fact, I'm working with a company right now. They have two customers that represent about 80% of their business. Well, guess what? Both of those customers are in industries that are very much struggling. So guess what?
Yeah,
my customer is struggling because they allowed themselves to become addicted to the easy business that they were getting from these couple big customers.
So listeners on the podcast have heard me tell this story before, but I'll just say it to you now because it's really prevalent. When I joined this company 2 years ago, I did an assessment. I came in to grow the business and to lead the sales team. I did an assessment on where the business had come from. And for the last 6 years, they've suffered a period of decline. And I reviewed all of the numbers and reviewed all of clients and how much spend they'd done. And out of all of the client spend, 98% had spent year on year. So they were repeat customers. Only 2% of the customers that were new. So they had a def- distinct lack of new business coming through the doors, which was making their company suffer growth problems. So what we did at the start of the year is we set out a plan that we were going to do all this cold outreach. This is way before COVID. So I had these wonderful dreams that we were going to hit all these targets before COVID. And now the ceiling's fallen in on us. But I think given the current situation and the COVID situation, those 98% of customers have always bought from us are continuing to buy from us. So they do have their place. And I think you need to have a mix of both. And that's what you're saying. You're saying that actually referrals and the consistent business and the repeat business, that's your bread and butter, but you don't. That's not for salespeople. Salespeople should be selling. Account managers and customer service reps should be maintaining those relationships.
I've got to always be looking for the next new big customer. It's the only way I'm going to create really survive. Because here's the other piece. How do you know what opportunities are out there? How do you know what else is going on out there? Unless you're actively knocking on doors, making it happen.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Mark, we're coming up to the end of the podcast. And what we do on every single podcast is ask the same five questions. And I'm going to ask the same five questions to you. You've already answered one of them, to be fair, which was, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I wanted to be a fireman. I wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be a professional basketball player. Didn't work out on either of them.
How far along did you get in those dreams?
Not very far at all. I mean, yeah, I played a lot of hoops. But no, that wasn't actually 90.95 KQZ radio. No, it's okay.
Did you do radio as well?
I actually was a disc jockey in college. Yes, that's a long story. That's a separate story. You do not tell your parents this is why you went to college to become a disc jockey. Just saying, it's not a good strategy.
What's the worst job that you could ever do and why?
The worst job I could ever do. Wow. I worked on a farm when I was 12 years of age. And I picked fruit, and that was ugly. That was ugly. Hated it.
What's the worst sales mistake that you've ever made?
Oh, please don't bring that up. I would say it probably on more than a thousand occasions, I literally failed to close the sale because I was afraid to. Early on, especially. Early on, I was very much afraid to close the sale because the customer might say no. What do I do if a customer says no?
But then was that just a fear of picking up the phone or just a fear of rejection?
That was fear of rejection. Yeah. That was a fear of rejection.
How did you overcome that?
Well, this came back to the whole thing that I was going for the easy sale.
Yeah.
My whole thing was to go for the easy target. And if I don't sense you're an easy target right off the bat, I'm going to go and I'm going to move on to somebody else. And so what happened was I didn't stay in the game long enough with a lot of customers.
Yeah.
And what happened was I actually wound up and it's why I got fired from my first couple of sales jobs is because I was going for the easy sales. I was making a lot of commission, but boy, was I really making claims that the company couldn't live up to.
Yeah.
I was making statements that there was no way the company was, you know, I was just cashing the commission check and moving on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big mistake.
Yeah, because that once you get that reputation in the company that you're in, then people don't want to deal with you, do they?
Right. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So
I've got two questions left. What was the last book that you read?
The last book that I read was right here on the floor. It's Follow Up and Close the Sale by Jeff Shore. It's a sales book written by a good friend of mine. Just came out about a month ago.
Did you get it sent to you by Jeff?
Yes, he did send it to me. Yes, it is signed. But I did buy a copy of his book also to support him.
Honestly, I'm toying with the idea of writing a sales book. And I've got the formation of an idea. And listeners will have heard it on Mike's podcast about how I go into companies and shake up the sales process and make sure that people are doing the jobs that they're going to do. It's a hell of a commitment, isn't it? How long did the books take you to write?
It is. I mean, really, from start to finish, they take probably about 2.5 years.
Wow.
The actual writing of the book is only 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And really, it's only a couple months. But there's all the idea generation, kind of building up the idea of what you're working towards. And then after you get it done, it's the proofing. Let me tell you something. Writing a book is like giving birth. Now, I've never given birth. I'm sorry, but
I imagine that's what it feels like.
It would be.
And the final question is, who is the leader that you look up to the most?
Wow, that's a great question.
People on the podcast tend to try and veer away from politics, and I don't mind that. We've had questions or answers such as Muhammad Ali, Nelson Mandela, Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand president. I think we have had one guest who said that Donald Trump was the leader that he looked up to the most, and that was Joseph Valente, who's the Apprentice winner from the UK. So you've got,
oh yeah, okay,
yeah,
well
yeah.
That would make sense. Sure.
Yeah. So
I would say the number one person I look up to is probably Tom Osborne, who you've never heard of before, but he was a football coach, the U.S. football coach, college team here in Nebraska for about 25 years. He won some national championships and just represents legacy, represents really making an impact in people, and always incredibly calm, almost cerebral, but you knew he was always thinking of the next move, the next play, and always kept the other person as the center of everything he was doing. It was never about him. It was always about the other person.
Do you think that incredibly great leaders need to leave a legacy? Because I think that's, I'm just turning 40, and what I want to do is create something which leaves a legacy. I don't know if you felt the same, that you want to leave something when you retired or finished working.
Yes. I think if a great leader isn't leaving a legacy, then they're not a great leader. I write about two individuals in my book, A Mind for Sales, a sales manager I had, and the manager of a restaurant I worked in. Two individuals who made a tremendous impact on my life. They didn't know it at the time.
Yep.
But I challenge people today, view your life, view each conversation you have with somebody as if they are going to look back 5 or 10 years from now and say, wow, I remember that conversation I had with Matt. He made a huge difference in my life. I don't say that from arrogance. I say that from being a person who delivers impact. That's what a salesperson is.
Yeah, totally. I appreciate your time, Mark. Where can people find out more information about you?
Well, the best place is the website. It's thesaleshunter.com. I've got videos. I've got books. We've got all kinds of things out there, but there's plenty of stuff for you to take and to learn from.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.